adjournment whip to move? The question is that this House do now adjourn. Emily Thornberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Spirit of Humanity sailed from Larnaca, Cyprus at the end of June, attempting to get to Gaza seaport, sailing under a Greek flag. There were 21 passengers and crew on board from 11 different countries, including 6 British people, and one of them was one of my constituents, a Miss Alex Harrison, who lives on the Marquis estate. In the early hours of the 30th of June, whilst they were still in international waters, they were surrounded by Israeli gunboats and threatened with being fired on. Their radar and communication systems were jammed, and they were warned hourly that they must turn back because, quote, they must change course, you are headed for a blockaded area. All force necessary will be used. There were lights flashed at them throughout the nights, and when they were 24 miles from Gaza, Zodiac boats appeared and then left again. About 4 miles into Gaza waters, the boats reappeared. There were 6 boats with 12 soldiers in each, wearing full-face balaclavas. They boarded the boat. All the passengers lay on the floor, but my constituent, as a member of the crew, was still standing, and so she was pushed to the floor at gunpoint.
Can my friend give
way? Yes, I can.
I thank my friend for giving way, and I'm very pleased that she secured this debate. Could she confirm that what the Israeli Navy was doing at this point was totally illegal in terms of international law, and that it was stopping an unarmed civilian vessel that was carrying well-known humanitarian aid and was not in itself armed in any way, and that this is a contravention of international law?
It would seem to me to be that that is the case, and I certainly would be asking the Minister to confirm that. It took 7 hours for the boat to get into port, to the port of Ashdod, where they were greeted by hundreds of jeering Israeli soldiers. Between them, they were held between 1 and 7 days. They were charged with illegally coming into Israel and deported. Of course, that was ironic, because the last place that they wanted to be was in Israel. They wanted to go to Gaza, and to go to Gaza as part of a Palestinian state. But what they did, what they were doing, was to try to publicise what's been happening in Gaza, and if I might crave the House's indulgence, I would like to just outline some of the things that seem to have been happening in Gaza recently. As the House knows, Gaza is a small coastal strip and it's cut off from the outside world. Even before the latest hostilities, drastic restrictions on the movement of people and goods were imposed by the Israeli authorities, particularly since October 2007, and that has led to worsening poverty, rising unemployment and deteriorating public services, such as healthcare, water and sanitation. And when the eyes of the world were on Gaza, in the immediate aftermath of the military action by Israel against Gaza, it was hoped that the tunnels would be closed and the crossings would be opened, and that Gaza might have a chance. However, 6 months later, after the hostilities have finished and when the eyes of the world have looked away, restrictions on imports continue, and it is impossible for Gazans to rebuild their lives. The quantities of goods now entering Gaza fall well short of what is required to meet the population's needs. According to the International Red Cross, in May 2009, only 2,662 truckloads of goods entered Gaza from Israel, a decrease of almost 80% compared to the 11,382 truckloads allowed in during April 2007, before Hamas took over the territory.
In fairness, I think the Israeli government's stance should be put. I wrote to them about what had happened in relation to the Spirit of Humanity, and they wrote back and told me that receipt of humanitarian supplies means that in some cases this has led to a surplus of humanitarian aid. Is this a situation that my honourable friend recognises?
I mean, I rely on the International Red Cross and their excellent report published in June 2009, which gives an up-to-date assessment of what is happening in Gaza. And, of course, it's always difficult to get access to information upon which everyone can rely, but surely no one can argue with the International Red Cross on this issue. And they state, for example, that the water and sanitation services could collapse at any moment in Gaza, which raises the spectre of a major public health crisis. They also go on to say that the only way to address this crisis is to lift import restrictions on spare parts, water pipes and building materials, such as cement and steel, so that homes can be rebuilt and the vital infrastructure maintained and upgraded. There are terrible stories coming out about healthcare, and one of the people suffering as a result of the restrictions is a woman that the Red Cross highlights who has a pancreatic tumour. She's only 26. Her name is Doa. and she's been waiting since January 2009 for permission to travel through Israel to get to Jordan for an operation. She has so far been refused, and she's likely to die. And those who wish to get out of Gaza in order to be able to get health care, because there is not sufficient and adequate health care within Gaza for those who have terrible conditions, find themselves caught in a bureaucratic maze. They find themselves requesting permission to leave the territory, which is incredibly complicated, and they find themselves waiting for many months, and many of them die. And even those who do get permission to leave, in order to get through the crossing, that itself can be very arduous, and patients on life support machines are removed from ambulances and placed on stretchers and carried 60 to 80 metres through the crossing to ambulances waiting on the other side. And patients who can walk unassisted often face extensive questioning before they're allowed through the crossing for medical treatment. Or, as sometimes happens, they're simply refused entry into Israel and are turned back again. The economy is strangled, there is soaring unemployment, there is alarming poverty, and we simply have to allow Gaza to breathe. Local industry, agriculture and fisheries and other businesses have not been allowed to rebuild, to import essential inputs and to export their products. But even that would take time. The crisis has become so severe and entrenched that even if all the crossings were to be opened tomorrow, it would take years for the economy to recover. We must end the virtual blockade of Gaza. The crossing points must be opened, and the legitimate security concerns of the Israelis have to be balanced with the right of Palestinians to live normal and dignified lives. Re-establishing humanitarian aid is only really the international community pleading to be allowed to put sticking plasters onto Gaza. What the people of the region really need, more than anything else, is political courage. They need a political solution that will give peace and security to the people of Israel and Palestine.
Will my honourable friend allow me? She's describing an intolerable situation perpetrated by the Israeli state. Is it not a fact that her constituent and my constituent, who were on board the Spirit of Humanity, were trying to alleviate that humanity, inhumanity, but were then victims first of piracy by the Israeli Navy and then of kidnapping by the Israeli army?
Again, on the face of it, that would seem to be accurate, and I would welcome the Minister's comments on this. I would ask if the Minister could perhaps give me an update on whether or not the Her Majesty's Government agreed that they were, at the very least, harassed in international waters. And I would also ask, given the wholly disproportionate nature of the Israeli military operation in Gaza in January, whether the government would reassess whether it's appropriate to sell arms or to buy arms from Israel. I'd finally ask, what hope there is for Gaza.
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I begin by congratulating my honourable friend, the Member of Parliament for Islington South and Finsbury, on securing this debate. She obviously is concerned in terms of the fact that her constituent, Miss Alex Harrison, was on the Spirit of Humanity at the time these incidents occurred. It's important we begin by saying, Mr. Speaker, that helping to alleviate the humanitarian situation in Gaza is a high priority for this government. Equally importantly is working towards a long-term, sustainable, peaceful settlement in the Middle East. I want to begin by providing an update regarding the vessel Spirit of Humanity, which the Free Gaza Movement NGO, as my honourable friend has said, attempted to sail from Cyprus to Gaza. The United Kingdom appreciates and shares the concerns expressed by many individuals and organisations, including the Free Gaza Movement, regarding the humanitarian situation in Gaza. Current travel advice from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office advises clearly against all travel to Gaza, including to the waters off Gaza. But we recognise too that there is a need for access by major international organisations, including those based in the United Kingdom, to carry out humanitarian and reconstruction work in Gaza and to engage in independent reporting and verification of the situation on the ground. I certainly give way.
I thank my honourable friend. I'm glad he says that the government shares a concern of bodies about the what has happened to the free spirit of free enterprise, but would he not go further and say that this is another example of the way in which the Israeli government believes it has some kind of dispensation to flout international law, not only by harassing ships in international waters, but also by building settlements on occupied land, by building walls on occupied land, and by blockading people in Gaza?
Well, I'll go on to deal with the specific issues to do with the spirit of humanity in a moment, but the government has made it very clear that we believe the cessation in terms of illegal settlements is absolutely a crucial starting point with regard to the peace process. We welcome the recent speech by the President of the United States in Cairo, which made that point, and the question of progress on settlements is fundamental in terms of any progress with regard to the peace process. But, Mr. Speaker, I want to return to the question of the spirit of humanity. I want also to make the point that those wanting to go to Gaza should coordinate their entry and exit with those major international organisations and shouldn't attempt to enter Gaza without approval either from the Israeli or the Egyptian authorities. As my honourable friend has said, the Israeli Navy took control of the Spirit of Humanity on the 30th of June and diverted it to Ashdod port in Israel. The Israeli Navy handed all those on board, including the six British nationals, to Israeli immigration officials, who then placed them in detention. Officials at... I'll give way to the...
I thank the Minister for giving way at this point. Surely he's skipped over something here. There is an issue about the legality of the action of the Israeli Navy in apprehending a civilian vessel in international waters. And if he's accepting Israel's control of the waters off Gaza, then that surely is accepting the occupation.
I'll come on to my honourable friend's point in a moment. I want to go back to this. I'll certainly give way to the honourable gentleman.
I'm very grateful. Following on from the honourable lady and her constituent, who was educated in my constituency and whose parents live in Croydon, they expressed concern to me that Alex Harrison was detained for 23 hours without food and water by the Israeli authorities, and I wonder whether or not the Minister has any information on that. Her parents also expressed concern that the FCO, although admittedly contacted late at night, were fairly unhelpful for quite a long time in terms of giving a response to her parents when expressing concern about both her treatment and the attitude of the FCO to the incident in question.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can deal with that point directly. Officials at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv confirmed that they were given good access to British nationals, and all of the British nationals that they had contact with confirmed that they were treated well during their detention. So that seems to be at odds with the contribution from the honourable gentleman. In terms of the incident, my right honourable friend, the Foreign Secretary, discussed this issue directly with Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman on the 1st of July. The Israeli authorities then deported the British nationals on the 6th of July. As honourable members are aware, they're now back in the United Kingdom. I'll give way to the honourable gentleman.
I'm grateful for the Minister to give way, and he wrote to me last week about this particular issue. I'd like to ask the Minister, when the Foreign Secretary met the Foreign Minister for Israel, did he protest at the interception of a civilian vessel in international waters?
My honourable friend sought clarification in terms of the series of events which took place, and I'm going to go on in a moment to talk about this question of where the vessel was intercepted. My honourable friend raised that issue directly with the Israeli Foreign Minister. We have raised that issue directly with the Israeli government, and at this stage, in terms of reporting back to the House, we're unable to confirm whether the vessel was intercepted in international waters or whether it was intercepted in Gazan waters. Whatever the situation, it's clear that all states must respect international law, and that must apply to international law in terms of the sea as well. So that is the... I give way to my honourable friend.
The Israeli view is that they were enforcing international agreements, which means that they have the responsibility for what they put as being against external threats, and that the Israeli-Palestinian interim agreement on the West Bank and Gaza Strip means that foreign vessels may not approach closer than 12 nautical miles from the coast. Is that the Foreign Office's view of the situation?
Minister. Well, as I've tried to say to honourable members, Mr. Speaker, we've sought clarification from the Israeli authorities, from the Israeli government, in terms of where the ship was and what the appropriate course of action was in the context of international law. We still seek that clarification. But it's absolutely clear from the United Kingdom government point of view that the Israeli government must act consistently with international law, and that must apply in terms of the laws of the sea. We've raised this with the Foreign Minister, we've sought clarification, and we await further information. I'm not able to give the House any further information than that on this particular incident this evening. Turning more generally to the situation in Gaza, I think honourable members...
The information that the Israeli government has given me is that they intercepted the Spirit of Humanity within Gazan waters, not within international waters. So does Israel have the right to intercept vehicles at that particular location?
Well, as far as I'm aware, while there may be a debate about whether it be appropriate, that would not in itself be in breach of international law. And the accusation that's been made, of course, in terms of this intervention, was that in some way it contravened international law. If it were to be in Gazan waters, people may have a political debate about whether that is appropriate, but it would not be, as we understand it, in breach of international law. Can I give way to my honourable friend?
There is one argument about whether it was in international waters or not, and certainly my constituent has made clear that from his point of view, they were in international waters. But setting that aside, is it not bizarre as well as obnoxious that the Israelis should abduct all of those on that ship into a country they had no intention of visiting, and then deporting them from a country they had no intention of visiting?
Well, I hear my right honourable friend's view of the situation. What we have sought to do is clarify from the Israeli government why they felt the need to take this action and whether this action was consistent with international law, taking account of their security concerns and also taking account of the desire of people to get humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. So that is the position of the United Kingdom government. My right honourable friend is entitled to his opinion, but that opinion is not shared at this stage in terms of the information that we have at our disposal by the United Kingdom government. I'll give way to my honourable friend.
Grateful to my honourable friend. Has he been convinced by Israel's explanations?
We have sought clarification about what took place, where it took place, and what were the conditions which prevailed at the time. We will continue to seek that clarification. We have made it clear, as ever, to the Israeli government that we expect them to behave in a way which is consistent with international law. We also respect the fact that the Israelis have a right to take reasonable measures to protect the security of their citizens and their border. I'll give way to you.
The impression that the Minister is giving that Israel can act with impunity and that we are relying upon Israel itself to give us the information upon which we can make a judgment. Can I suggest to him that we need an independent investigation of this matter? These are British citizens that were detained, that were held, as the honourable friend has said, taken to a country which they didn't wish to visit and deported from there. In any other circumstances, we would be taking diplomatic action against any other country in the world.
Minister. Well, I don't agree, Mr. Speaker, with my honourable friend. He claims that I, from the dispatch box, have suggested that Israel should be able to act with impunity, when I've said throughout my contribution that Israel has a responsibility to act consistently with international law. And that is the clarification that we have sought from the Israeli government. Did on this occasion they act consistently with international law in terms of where they intercepted this vessel? We sought that clarification, and we shall continue to seek further information. But how that implies impunity, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure. I'll give way to the honourable.
I'm grateful for the Minister for giving way. When he gets a statement from the Israeli government, and given that that ship, whatever might be said about Israel's security arrangements, and that's for them, was unarmed, what action does he propose the British government will take to ensure that future unarmed vessels trying to deliver aid to Gaza are not impounded in such a way?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've made it clear that we expect individuals and organisations seeking to get aid to Gaza to do so in consultation with the appropriate authorities. And we expect that to happen. And we advise that that is the best way to proceed if organisations and individuals genuinely want to get humanitarian aid through to the people of Gaza. That is the point I would make. I'm not going to have a running commentary on what the United Kingdom may do in some circumstances that may prevail at some stage in the future. I don't believe that that is appropriate during the course of this debate, and I'm going to make some progress now, Mr. Speaker. We are very concerned about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. We know that the conflict earlier this year intensified an already difficult situation. The pace of deterioration, it's true, has slowed since the ceasefire in January, but it's evident that the humanitarian situation remains extremely serious. The strict border restrictions, including on legitimate aid, reconstruction materials, trade, goods and people, are having a major impact on the lives of ordinary Gazans who we know are suffering serious hardship. Approximately 90% of Gazans depend partly on food aid. During May, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the number of truckloads of goods allowed entry into Gaza was approximately 2,960. However, Mr. Speaker, that isn't enough. It represents less than a quarter of the monthly average of truckloads that entered Gaza in the first 5 months of 2007, before the tightening of the border restrictions in June of that year. We are concerned that these restrictions and Hamas's control of the economy, including the smuggling tunnels, mean that the population of Gaza are being denied hope, access to the means to rebuild their lives, and the chance of economic growth and education. Although there is no permanent physical Israeli presence in Gaza, Israel retains significant control over Gaza's borders, airspace, and territorial waters. It therefore retains obligations under the Fourth Geneva Convention. The convention is clear that an occupying power must cooperate in allowing the passage and distribution of relief consignments. It is therefore essential that the government of Israel ease the restrictions on the Gaza border and allow an immediate increase in the flow of essential aid and reconstruction materials into Gaza, as well as the legitimate flow of trade, goods and people. My right honourable friend, the Foreign Secretary, raised the United Kingdom's concerns on this general issue in his meetings with the Israeli Defence Minister Ehud Barak on the 6th of July, and his conversations with the Israeli Foreign Minister. I've referred to one of those conversations, which have taken place on the 13th of May and the 1st of July. Together with the European Union, the United States and the wider international community, we will continue to press the Israeli government at the highest levels to reduce the restrictions. But it's also true, Mr. Speaker, that Israel is not the only party that should move. Hamas must renounce violence, recognise Israel, accept previous agreements, and work with the Palestinian Authority towards a positive outcome to the current national dialogue negotiations presided over by Egypt. And Mr. Speaker, it must release Gilad Shalit, whom it kidnapped and has held illegally for over 3 years, without contact with his family or access for the Red Cross. As my right honourable friend, the Foreign Secretary, stated on the third anniversary of Gilad Shalit's abduction on the 25th of June, we call on Hamas for his immediate, unconditional and safe release. We share the Shalit family's dismay at Hamas's refusal to allow the IRC access to Gilad. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, I plan to visit Israel and the Palestinian territories in the summer. I intend to develop my first-hand experience as a new minister in this role of the challenges that are faced by both Israelis and Palestinians. And I shall take a very strong message that the United Kingdom intends to pursue a leadership role in terms of the securing of a two-state solution in the Middle East. That we believe the recent speech from President Obama in Cairo gives us a new sense of hope and a way forward. We welcome the fact that Prime Minister Netanyahu, for the first time, acknowledged the fact that the two-state solution was the objective, although there's a long way to go in terms of the Israelis' willingness to move on settlements. And we also believe that the Arab Peace Initiative offers a very promising basis for future negotiations.
The question is that this House do now adjourn. As many as have that opinion say aye. Of the contrary, no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Order. Order.